are being held hostage right now by Hamas.
National Security Council spokesman John Kirby also says no one has turned a blind eye to Iran's destabilizing behavior, including longstanding support for Hamas and Hezbollah. But he says there's still no specific evidence that Iran was directly involved in Saturday's Hamas attacks. Fox's Trey Yingst visiting one town in southern Israel where more than 100 people were killed.
People with hands tied behind their back and then executed. The kitchen floors are stained with blood. Mothers holding their small children, bodies decapitated. Horrific, horrific scenes.
Earlier today, President Biden calling it terrorism beyond the pale after another call with Israel's prime minister. The White House pressing Congress for more money to help Israel and Ukraine.
There's going to be a path forward that the OMB director is going to lay out and see the best way to move forward. I'm not going to get ahead of that.
But spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre says the U.S. is capable of doing both. After a closed-door meeting of House Republicans.
I want to thank my House Republican colleagues for just designating me as the speaker.
Majority Leader Steve Scalise emerging as the nominee to be the next House Speaker, though it wasn't unanimous in the conference vote, 113-99, defeating Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, but several Republicans voted present or for others. Scalise will need about 217 votes in the full House. Fox News just confirming the House plans to convene at this hour and then recess for now. America is listening to Fox News.
Pure Talk, America's wireless company, is on a mission to alleviate $10 million in military debt by Veterans Day, but they're going to need your help. Now, Pure Talk will donate a percentage of every new order to this great cause. When you make the switch, they make it simple, fast, and easy to their super fast 5G network. Talk, text, plenty of data now, only at $20 a month. Do it right now. Dial #250. Say the keyword save now. Make the switch to Pure Talk, and you can help a military member in need.
For over a decade, Simply Safe has revolutionized home security, and our latest advancement is here, 24/7 Live Guard protection, only from Simply Safe. Now, monitoring agents can see and speak to intruders through our new indoor camera to help stop crime in real time and for fast police response. Get 20% off any new system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/radio. Advanced home security, 24/7 professional monitoring for less than a dollar a day. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
President Biden highlighting a proposed new rule aimed at targeting hidden costs he says are busting family budgets.
Junk fees are the nickel and dime charges paid when buying, for example, a plane seat or a concert ticket or getting services at a bank. President Biden says those costs
really add up.
He's teaming with the Federal Trade Commission and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to push all-in upfront pricing.
That's where companies fully disclose their fees upfront. When you start shopping, and there's no real surprise at the end.
Also, if those fees are refundable, the president says making the all-in rules binding could mean penalties for companies that keep hiding costs. Gernal Scott, Fox News.
It's day 27 of the United Auto Workers strike against GM, Ford, and Stellantis.
Still no response from the union to GM's latest offer on the contract. Last week, they made a huge concession, agreeing that the battery plants they're building would be covered by the union contract. In addition, they've also increased retirement benefits and reinstated cost of living adjustments. I talked to U.S. Senator John Fetterman from Pennsylvania about the union's demands.
Are you worried about the impact on the companies if they negotiate a deal that is puts them at a disadvantage?
No. I hope these workers make them pay until they pay them what they deserve.
As a result of the strike, GM has laid off 2,300 workers, Ford about 1,800, and Stellantis 640.
Fox Business's Jeff Flock at a GM parts facility in Pennsylvania. Minutes just released in the latest Fed meeting showing central bankers plan to proceed carefully when deciding on further rate hikes. Several also saying it's time for a shift in policy decisions from how high to raise rates to how long to keep rates at restrictive levels in the fight against inflation. An hour to the close, the Dow's down 4 points. Lisa Brady, Fox News.
The following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Problems all day long. Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We are at 660 AM or 97.5 on the FM dial. You can also live stream us at KFAR.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your guest host, Nick Nugent. I'm filling in for Dave Prus, who is off today while he's meeting with our congressional delegation and trying to benefit Fairbanks through that meeting. Today is Wednesday. Our topic will be something historical, and think it'll be an enjoyable show this morning. Today, we have myself here in the studio, and today's topic is Josiah Edward Spur. Spur may not be a name that everyone knows. Probably have heard of Mount Spur and a few other things, but Spur was an early geologist with the USGS who was contemporary with Alfred Hughes Brooks, who we've talked about here before, and they, in particular, set a pattern of exploration and writing about mineral potential that greatly piqued the interest of people outside. Some of these early surveys probably had a lot to do with the extra miners that came into the Yukon and hence the Klondike. Well, Spur was born into a New England fishing family. His small size and his predilection towards seasickness rendered him pretty much unusable as a commercial fisherman. Instead, he forged a career as a geologist. And regardless of his stature and apparent lack of physical strength, Spur led pioneering expeditions to Alaska that demanded at least as much stamina and strength as the fishing career he left behind. He was always recognized as an accomplished field observer and a leader in the new service of science of economic geology. Spur was a nonconformist on the origins of ore deposits, and he was a prolific author on that very subject. In his later years, Spur turned his powers of observation to selenology, which is the branch of astronomy dealing with the Earth's moon. He published 4 extensively illustrated volumes in 1944 through 1949 on geology applied to selenology. Possibly Spur's best known account and would be his most enjoyable work was the popular account of his Alaska adventures, and that was the ones on the Yukon, and it was published as Through the Yukon Gold Diggings, a Narrative of Personal Travel. That came out in 1900. It is an excellent account of the late 1800s in Alaska and Yukon. His writing ability was started when he worked on the high school newspaper and even earlier had tried poetry. So, as I mentioned, he was born in New England in Gloucester, Massachusetts, October 1st, 1870, to Alfred and Horatia Spur. He was the 5th of 7 children. In their limited space home, Josiah, nicknamed Eddie, slept in the attic with his 2 older brothers. He writes that his older siblings made sure that any original opinion he held was promptly squashed. Sometime later, he remembered that no more complete underling ever existed. But from this rather miserable experience, Stephen Spur, Josiah's grandson and biographer, concluded that Josiah mastered the skills of adaptability, compromise, and diplomacy that served him very well in adult life. He was also known for being absolutely honest. When you read various accounts of him as a young man, he did not take the dishonest or the other than the easy way out. Well, his father, who was a sea captain, had a strong influence on him. Alfred, the father, was always quite proud of his son, who had shown as a scholar from boyhood, although he does mention that later in life, his father was never quite sure what he did for a living. As a youth, Josiah earned his spending money by selling flounder and a small fish called cunners, which he caught, sold them door to door, and in season, blueberries and dandelion greens. At home, he read widely, and he wrote epic poetry. His poetry was admired by his mother, but less so by the poet Oliver Wendell Holmes. Josiah sent a copy of some of his poetry, and Holmes advised the lad to not quit his day job. He graduated from high school in 1888. He was recognized by his peers as the best class orator. He liked and respected all of his teachers except for his geometry teacher. Josiah did not believe a proof that she had given in class and worked one out himself, and she just dismissed it. He sent it to the author of the textbook, who agreed that Spurr's proof was the same as the one worked out by Euclid, which made it correct by definition. He showed the response to his teacher, Mrs. Burns, who didn't appreciate this one-upmanship, and she retaliated by trying to have him thrown out of school. Fortunately, he was too well-liked by many others. Fall of 1888, with money from his savings and a brother-in-law, Spurr entered Harvard. He was maintained by scholarships and a tutoring income. He was tied for top scholar with one other person in a class of 400 at the end of his first half year. Overwork, compounded with mononucleosis and a poor financial position, forced Spurr out of Harvard for a while. He had a less stressful environment then with being out of school, but he thought that he would like to do geology as a field of study. That was confirmed by his choice of geology professor N.S. Shaler as his advisor. So a lifelong friend, also one of Shaler's students, Alfred Hulse Brooks, who became Mr. Alaska Geology, was also at Harvard at that time. Continued financial problems forced a few further delays, and he was a little slow on completing his degree, but Spurr applied and was accepted to a position with the Minnesota Geological Survey, then commencing a study of the Great Mesabi Iron Range. In 1893, Spurr received his magna cum laude degree by mail because he was unable to be there. In 1894, he was able to receive a master's degree, and he produced maps, drafted them, collect specimens, ground the thin sections himself, and on his own wrote a classic report, which he had to complete with money out of his own pocket because the survey had run out of money. The report was the iron-bearing rocks of the Mesabi Range of Minnesota. Well, this work in Minnesota was very widely known and well accepted. It contributed to his appointment to the U.S. Geologic Survey, then beginning an interest in Alaska. Before that time, 1894, and except for W.H. Dahl's report on Alaska's coal resources, the survey's Alaska presence had been quite limited. Another geologist, Willard Hayes, Mount Hayes is named after, had been attached to the privately funded Schwatka-Wrangell Mountain Expedition in 1891, but no comprehensive survey of Alaska's suspected hard mineral wealth had been attempted by the USGS at this time. Spurr's investigations immediately preceded, the time he was in Alaska, immediately preceded the Klondike discovery in August of 1896, and of course the rush of 1898, Spurr and his associates Frank Schrader and Harold Goodrich had left Circle 4 days after the strike and never heard the news. They probably could have gone back to Dawson and been very helpful with working out the geology. And it's time now for some commercial breaks from some of our program's very excellent sponsors. I hope everyone is interested.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, listen up. Affordable Used Cars has purchased over 450 late model vehicles to fill the lot. With a great selection to choose from, you can find that vehicle you've been looking for. We have Tacoma TRDs, 4Runner TRDs, Sienna Hybrid all-wheel drives, Bronco Sports, and many more makes and models to choose from. They're arriving daily and won't last long. Hurry in for the best selection before they're all gone. Come downtown to Affordable Used Cars at 2525 South Cushman.
The Fairbanks Clinic has been here for you since 1932, the year Amelia Earhart completed the first female nonstop solo flight across the Atlantic, the year BBC aired their first television broadcast. That was over 90 years ago, and they're still here, still taking care of you and your family. That's the Fairbanks Clinic in their beautiful building at the corner of Cushman and Gaffney. Call and schedule your appointment today with their family care practice. That's the Fairbanks Clinic, here for you since 1932.
Big Daddy says forget Taco Tuesday. Come on down for ribs. Just $1.50 each every Tuesday at Big Daddy's. Oh, yes, ribs from Big Daddy's are legendary. And at $1.50 each, you can feed the whole family. Don't forget those sides, including collard greens, fried okra, red beans and rice, coleslaw, all genuine from the Northernmost Southern Barbecue. Make sure you don't miss $1.50 Rib Tuesdays at Big Daddy's on Wickersham between 1st and 2nd Avenues in downtown Fairbanks.
Weather brought to you by The Woodway. Toyotomi oil heaters have warmed interior Alaska homes for decades. Efficient, quiet, and reliable. Buy yours today. The Alaskan way. The right way. The Woodway.
KFAR Weather.
Overcast skies today with daytime highs approaching 27. Winds out of the north around 5 miles an hour. Overcast skies again tonight. Chance of snow. Lows dip down to about 17. Chance for snow again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 31. Cloudy skies expected. That's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner.
Welcome back to KFAR's Problem Corner. We'll resume our discussion with myself about Josiah Spurr, an early member of the United States Geological Survey. If you'd like to call in, you can do so by dialing 458-TALK or 458-8255. We'll try to get to your call. Well, we had been talking about some of what Spurr done in his initial arrival in Alaska. Spurr led two expeditions of historic importance in Alaska for the survey in 1896 and 1898. In 1896, he led the first expedition to map and chart the interior of Alaska. He explored the Yukon Territory, where gold had been discovered in the 40 Mile and Birch Creek drainages. In 1898, Spurr went down the length of the Kuskokwim River, naming as he traveled various and unnamed mountains, ranges, creeks, rivers, lakes, and glaciers. At the end of the Kuskokwim expedition, he made the first scientific observations of the Mount Katmai volcano and the valley that later became known as the Valley of 10,000 Smokes. During these expeditions, he encountered various Native Americans, traders, missionaries, prospectors, whiskey smugglers, and a number of con artists. His books were seen, the ones that were done out of these trips, were seen as the definitive work on Alaska minerals during the Gold Rush era. They read like an adventure, including the expedition's experiences. In one case, an ice dam bearing down on them, lost provisions, and interactions with the local native people and missionaries. The Yukon Gold District that spanned the Canada-U.S. border had been prospected since the early 1870s. Three men, Harper, Mayo, and McQuestion, came into the country in the early 1870s and opened trading posts. They prospected, especially Harper, who had studied the region, and concluded that it was probably auriferous, that gold ore would be there. Harper encouraged other prospectors to join in the search. several Yukon tributaries, especially the Stewart River, which were quite rich, but the deposits were transient and of limited extent. They were good where they existed. The main significance of the shallow river gold bar deposits was basically as indicators of the likely existence of more extensive deep placer or lode source deposits. In 1886, a man named Franklin discovered some of those deep placers on tributaries to the 40 Mile, and by 1896, the 40 Mile was a quite mature district. In the meantime, two of McQuesten's native relatives discovered the very important Birch Creek, later Circle Mining District. Mining was active on also at Mission and American Creeks near the present-day Eagle, Alaska. And a Creole, Ivan John Minook, was mining downriver near the ramparts of the Yukon. Although soon to be upstaged by the Klondike, the American prospectors had discovered the first important Alaska gold province, but it was virtually unknown geologically, and that was remedied by the efforts of Spur and his two hand-picked Harvard assistants, Frank Schrader and Harold Goodrich. Spur, Schrader, and Goodrich left Washington, D.C. then in late May 1896. They disembarked on a coastal excursion steamer at Juneau, where they met some sourdoughs, one on his third trip to the interior, and those sourdoughs, a fellow named Wilborg, Cooper, and a British explorer, Danlin, gave them a lot of good information on things that they should buy to go to the interior, which they hadn't yet, so they were able to pick those up in Juneau. They all crammed on a coastal tug bound for Dyea. In June 1896, Dyea consisted of one building, possibly 100 whites, and a rather small tent village of native packers who were available for hire. A year later, of course, it had thousands of miners bound for the Klondike over Chilkoot Pass. Spur was a little skeptical looking at the packers. He wasn't sure he could hold up what they said they could, but he got the rates, and Spur watched as the native men picked up loads of up to 160 pounds, while women and older sons managed 100. He said he was totally impressed as one boy, who obviously laid less than 100 pounds body weight, balanced 100 pounds of freight and took off up the steep trail. Over the pass, and with the help of a sturdy riverboat, the men shot the rapids downstream from Lindeman Lake, and eventually and safely landed at 40 Mile, where their geologic work commenced. Noting the extreme abundancy and ferocity of Yukon mosquitoes, Spur's party otherwise took the pioneering trek in stride. Well, at 40 Mile then, the geologists split up so they could visit each of the seven 40-mile tributary creeks, Miller, Glacier, Poker, Davis, Chicken, Franklin, and Napoleon, that comprised the district. Based on this work, Spur made the first geological map of the district, and in his government account, Spur recorded the shape of the creeks, the composition and depth of the pay gravels, and the source and occurrence of the gold. When the 40-mile work was completed, the young geologists would again split up in order to make a timely visit to each of the productive creeks in the Mission Creek, which is Eagle, and the Birch Creek, Circle, mining districts. Spur followed the same outline in his popular account of the Yukon goldfields, but focused on the miners themselves. He recorded that each camp had its own particular distinguishing characteristics. Spur noted that the miners at the 40 Mile were friendly and scholarly. They were interested in current affairs and science. They read and were familiar with Shakespeare. One man turned out to be a nearly contemporaneous Harvard grad. In contrast, at Hoggum Creek, later renamed Deadwood Creek in the Birch Creek District, Spur thought the miners were surly And if educated, they did a very good job of hiding it. Well, he describes some of the dances and different things that went on and the entertainments that had. When he arrived at McQuestion's store, just as he was walking up to it, having just come off the river, he heard his name being called. Turns out mail had arrived on a steamer that had gotten to Circle just a few minutes before they had, and it had all traveled on, of course, a totally different route. Well, in the fashion of the time among USGS geologists, Spurr also studied and wrote scientifically on the hard rock geology, rocks and structure, as well as coal geology and resources of nearby districts such as the Koyukuk. In one paragraph, he announced the Klondike discovery, which occurred while they were 300 miles downstream headed to Minook Creek near Rampart. Between them, Spurr, Goodrich, and Schrader produced the monograph, Geology of the Yukon Gold District, Alaska, 392 pages long, published in the 18th Annual Report. And those reports, if you're interested in reading some of Spurr's historical comments as well as geology, are all available at the USGS publication site online. They're all available as downloads in PDF if you wish to learn more. Well, they worked together on the report. Goodrich particularly brought the prospecting history of the district up to date to 1897. Spurr described the geologic column of layered rocks, the igneous rocks and ore deposits. And although placer gold deposits were by far dominant, Spurr believed and described known quartz vein and other hard rock deposits, which he believed sourced the placers. He recognized and described high-level placers, the product of ancient streams, and methods of placer mining. So quite a bit more than what you might see in more modern reports, which tend to be very technical and very to the point. In Spurr's day, you were getting sort of a travel journal as well as a technical report. The reports are well worth watching. Well, Spurr had originally conceived this as a two-season project. His party completed all field work on the Yukon goldfields in a four-month period. They were back in Washington, D.C. by October 1896. And Spurr and his assistants compiled the text of their monograph, readied it for its 1898 publication. In 1897, the pressure was off of them because the field projects in Alaska had been canceled due to lack of funding. So Spurr then took advantage of the fieldwork hiatus, and in two somewhat overlapping ways, he became engaged to a Miss Sophie Burchard, whom he had met in Washington, D.C. He also determined to study in Europe, which at the time was almost a necessity if one wished to advance in the field of geology. Well, then, Sophie was the daughter of an aristocratic German soldier of fortune who had come to America to fight in the Civil War. She was 9 years younger than Spurr, and father William Burchard thought his daughter too young for marriage. And at this time, I believe we are just about ready for the break. I will listen for the music start and transfer over. Until then, well, you know that she, Sophie, was 9 years younger than Spurr, and her father thought she was a bit too young for marriage. So he proposed a strategy where Sophie would return to the family home in Germany while Spurr studied in Berlin. Well, turns out Spurr did not like the Teutonic methods that his teachers used, and he was more than happy to head to the Sorbonne, where his friend Brooks was studying. A few months later, Spur and Sophie returned to America, their engagement somewhat unresolved, but Spur found more certainty with his employment. In his absence, Congress had appropriated $25,000 for Alaska surveys, and there was enough for several projects. And with that, we'll take a break for Fox News, some weather, some commercial announcements, and please stay with us. We'll be back.
150 hostages held by Hamas, including babies, young kids, women.
Hamas is threatening to kill hostages if Israeli airstrikes continue. House Republicans working to choose their next Speaker of the House. Looks like they favor the current majority leader, Louisiana Steve Scalise. Texas Congressman Dan Crenshaw on the Fox News Channel says he has confidence in whoever's chosen.
I think we're in good hands with either Jim Jordan or Steve Scalise. I'm optimistic about how we operate from here. I'm optimistic about our future.
America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Minute reports that starting January 1st, the cost of cigarettes, tobacco products, and electronic vaping devices will cost more to purchase in the city of Fairbanks after the city council unanimously adopted an ordinance increasing the sales tax. The ordinance, sponsored by council members Lonnie Marnie and Sue Sprinkle, was originally intended to help provide some property tax relief, but public testimony Monday night swung toward health impacts caused by smoking and vaping. Jamie Morgan with the American Heart Association Alaska spoke in favor of the ordinance, noting high taxes can dissuade people, especially youth, from purchasing tobacco products and vaping devices. She noted that in Interior Alaska, about 30% of youth use some form of tobacco or nicotine product, with a large number of teens using e-cigarettes, which contain nicotine. The city currently levies an 8% wholesale tax on cigarettes, tobacco products, and vaping devices. According to a report provided by Fairbanks Chief Financial Officer Margarita Bell, a 20% increase would generate as much as $1.1 million in additional revenue.
Online at KFAR660.com.
You need to fix something? Are you looking for a whatchamacallit or a kind of thingamajig? Find it at Century Hardware. See the largest selection of standard and metric nuts, bolts, and screws in the interior. If it hooks on, holds on, hangs on, clips on, glues on, bolts on, screws in. If it fastens stuff together, Century has it. Always has. Be sure to ask about their prodigious selection of doomaflagies. Century Hardware. What you need right now.
You know that the Fairbanks Hearing and Balance Center is here to help you hear better. Now they're helping you even more by doubling your PFD. That's right. Call right now to set your appointment up in October, and they'll give you $1,500 towards a pair of advanced or premium hearing aid technology. Or you can get a free accessory with a standard level hearing aid. So if you've been struggling with your hearing and are trying to make it fit your budget, call now for their Double Your PFD special. The Fairbanks Hearing and Balance Center. Find out more at fairbankshearing.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Welcome back to KFAR's Problem Corner. We're going to resume our discussion about Josiah Spur. If you'd like to call in, you can do so by dialing 458-TALK or 458-8255. We'll try to get to your call. Well, we had just talked about Spur and Sophie Burchard. They came back to the U.S. Spur found out there was plenty of money, so he wasn't going to be an indigent. There were, interestingly, $5,000 left over from prior appropriations, and in those times, that was very much enough money to do several other projects. The director of the USGS, Charles Walcott, asked Spur to plan reconnaissance surveys of five areas. Firstly, the Susitna Basin north of Cook Inlet. Second, the adjacent Upper Susitna. Across the Alaska Range Divide, the part of southwest Alaska drained by the Kuskokwim River. The third was a suspected copper-rich area in Prince William Sound and the Copper River drainage. The fourth, the White and Tanana basins in the Yukon Province. And lastly, a broad area north from Resurrection Bay to the Tanana Basin. Spurs former assistant Frank Schrader chose the Prince William Sound region, and Alfred Brooks, the survey of the White River Tanana basins. Spur, who could have had any one of the five areas, chose the Alaska Range and Southwest Alaska Kuskokwim drainage basin, which was by far the most remote and the least known. Americans were familiar with the Cook Inlet region as far upstream as about Susitna Station, where the Yentna and the Susitna joined, but increasingly uncertain as the divide into the Kuskokwim was approached. The lower Kuskokwim was likewise well known, and the Russians had made some forays into the upper Kuskokwim drainage going upstream as far as Kalmykov Redoubt. The intervening country between the upper Skwentna and the Kalmykov was inhabited by natives but was totally wilderness to the Americans. It contains some of the most daunting terrain in Alaska, and it's very highly mineralized, although the first significant discoveries were made in the late 1960s, 70 years after Spurs' survey. Many peaks in that area are still unnamed. So, perhaps most importantly, these were part of the Army's last effort, and the Geologic Survey came along with the Army. They were provided transportation by the Navy. Because of these events in 1898, the Army basically quit Alaska exploration and mapping and turned it over to the USGS, who was really much better equipped for that type of project. So during this, we know that Spur led a team from the Upper Cook Inlet through the Alaska Range to the headwaters of the South Fork of the Kuskokwim. They started up the Susitna River in three canoes in late spring, ice still in the river. As they worked their way over the Alaska Range, Spur and his men drew maps, collected plants, and studied the wildlife and geology of the country. From the headwaters, the party went down to the Kuskokwim and followed the Kuskokwim in the canoes that they had transported across the mountains, which must have been a remarkable thing to drag through the mountains. And they then went down. When they reached Bethel, Spur changed his plans. Instead of crossing to the Yukon River and going to St. Michael, part of the team decided to head for Bristol Bay. That team was the group then that did the early surveys around Mount Katmai and in the Valley of 10,000 Smokes. Well, they had left Seattle on the U.S. Navy ship Wheeling, landed at Tyonek on April 26th, and Spur's professional crew consisted of Oscar Roan, probably remember the name Roan from the Iditarod at Roan Roadhouse. He was a geology graduate of the University of Wisconsin, T.S. Hickley, who was a naturalist, and William Schuyler Post, a topographer. Three men, A.E. Harrell, George Hartman, and John Madison, were hired as camp helpers and general labor. Madison was a trapper married to a local Native woman. He was hired in Tyonek to give a sort of a semblance of some local knowledge to the effort. For transport, they had brought the three yellow cedar canoes, which were made in Canada, very high-quality craft. And until they reached the divide and started on the Kuskokwim, they likely carried the canoes more than they rode in them. Well, the party then had, as we mentioned, left Tyonek in early May. They tried to go upstream, but they had to wait for the ice to go totally out on the Susitna, which happened on May 20th. They went to Susitna Station and left for the Yentna, when, after only a few more miles, they left the Yentna for the Skwentna. They found a good divide into the Kuskokwim, and finding a good divide into the Kuskokwim was much easier said than done. Spur faced an incipient mutiny in late June, when the party was still on the Cook Inlet side. After Spur used all of his powers of persuasion, a newly re-energized crew followed as Spur led off on July 2nd. They celebrated with a plum pudding on the 4th of July. They crossed into the Kuskokwim then at the headwaters of a low pass on Portage Creek in what is really some of the most spectacular terrain of the Alaska Range. Spur later described that as a wonderful panorama of mountain and lowland stretched before me for many miles into the distance. In the afternoon, it cleared and showed us fully for the first time the peaks and the glaciers towering far above us, magnificent precipitous mountains set with many spires and columns. I have never seen such beautiful mountains. They were awe-inspiring, like Gothic cathedrals, which they singularly suggest in tone, color, and spirit, but 1,000 times more vast and elaborate, with glaciers for roofs. Spur was, of course, as the first explorer of the region, had the privilege of naming many features, one of which he called the River Styx because it was turbulent and muddy, the Terracotta for a colorful range of mountains, and he memorialized his crew also, for whom he named the Post, Rhone, and Hartman Rivers. Spur and crew were finally into civilization when they reached Bethel and were fed their first complete meal in months by the Kilbucks, who were Moravian missionaries. But rather than crossing back into familiar territory of the lower Yukon at the Gentle Divide, that is the Paiute crossing, Spur, Rhone, Hinckley, and Post chose a lesser-known easterly route back toward Cook Inlet, while their camp hands crossed into the Yukon route, which seemed an easier and quicker way home. Spur and his professionals eventually arrived in Juneau on the little steamship Dora, November 7, 1898, then traveled uneventfully to Washington, D.C. His Kuskokwim report was published as a 233-page monograph in the 20th Annual Report of the USGS in 1900. And with that, I think now will be a good time to take a short break for some of our sponsors.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Amy Seiberlich here to tell you about Health Talk. Every Saturday at noon, join Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical and special guests like me who have our fingers on the pulse of Fairbanks Golden Heart. Learn about a wide range of topics and pick up some beneficial health tips and practical health information pertinent to interior Alaskans. Listen live every Saturday at noon or online anytime at kfarradio.com. Health Talk with Dr. Looper, brought to you by White Spruce Medical. Check us out at whitesprucemedical.com.
And paid for by Linear Marketing Group. Are you drowning in debt? Are you struggling to make minimum payments? Did you know that on average, a household with at least one credit card struggles with over $17,000 in credit card debt? If this sounds like you, know that it's not your fault. Credit card debt happens to good people. Credit card companies lure you in with low introductory rates and low minimum payments. Before you know it, you're in over your head. We've helped thousands of good people just like you become debt-free with our Debt Reset program that will dramatically reduce your debt down to a fraction of what you owe. Our Debt Reset program is customized to get you debt-free in as little as 24 to 48 months with one low monthly payment. If you owe over $10,000 in credit card debt or even personal loans, call 800-480-7003 now. There are no upfront fees or out-of-pocket expenses. You don't pay a dime until we succeed. Call now to see how the Debt Reset program can work for you. 800-480-7003. That's 800-480-7003. Again, 800-480-7003.
The Go Winter Expo, next weekend at the Carlson Center. The days are shorter, the weather's colder, and the snow, well, you know. The Go Winter Expo shows you how to beat that cabin fever. No matter what you love doing, we have something to heat up your winter fun factor. Check out the newest snow machines, pick up some health and wellness tips, all that and more, plus the Interior Alaska Gun Show. We have something for everyone. Next weekend at the Carlson Center, the Go Winter Expo. Info at fairbanksevents.com. Brought to you by Camper Valley RV and Napa Auto Care Group.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected today with a high of 27. Northerly winds around 5 miles per hour. Overcast skies again tonight. Chance for snow. Lows dip down to about 17. Chance for snow again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 31. Cloudy. Chance for snow Friday with highs in the mid-30s. Overcast Saturday. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
I'd like to welcome you all back to Problem Corner on KFAR. We are resuming our discussion with myself about Josiah Spurr. If you'd like to call in, you can do so by dialing 458-TALK or 458-8255. And we will try to get to your call. One thing I probably shouldn't leave out as we talk about expeditions like Spurr's, sitting here in the studio and in our homes, it sounds pretty straightforward and pretty easy. But in fact, the men on these expeditions suffered some fairly extreme privations. When you start reading the journals and some of the other diaries that go with the trips, they often are talking about being out of food, trying to subsist on berries in the fall, and at one point they were talking about they were trying to eat a sort of a flour bread mixture, if you will, and the way they cooked it, because they didn't have proper baking utensils, they would wrap a ball of flour around the end of a green stick and kind of hang it over the fire until it was cooked enough to eat, but not burned so badly it couldn't be eaten. It is kind of remarkable when we look at many of the surveyors and the early geologic survey members that many of them did live fairly long lives. You'd think that all the privation, all of the efforts they made might have taken that out of them a little. Well, Spurr now is back from Alaska. And his report was published in 1900. Josiah then married Sophie Burchard on January 18th, 1899. In Washington, Alfred Hulse Brooks was the best man. The marriage would have to be considered pretty eminently successful. It resulted in 5 sons, all of whom reflected the brilliance of their father. His children were Edward Ted Spurr, who was an entrepreneur, John Spurr, a publishing executive, William Alfred Spurr, professor of statistics at Stanford, Robert A. Spurr, professor of chemistry at the University of Maryland, and Stephen H. Spurr, an authority on forestry and forest ecology, and a former president of the University of Texas at Austin. The value that Spurr put on education certainly shows up when we see everything that his children were able to do. They had quite good careers themselves, and one of them, in fact, his youngest son, was his biographer. So a lot of the biographical data we have comes from what the younger son took. Well, with the conclusion then of the Kuskokwim project, Spurr's direct involvement with Alaska ceased. He could have taken Brooks's Alaska assignment, but he chose not to. He did, though, retain an interest in Alaska and used examples from Alaska in his seminal work on ore magmas, which was published in 1900. And through his government affiliation and at the request of USGS Director Charles Walcott, Spurr acted as a mineral advisor to the Sultan of Turkey, Abdul Hamid. The special assignment carried a significant raise in pay and travel expenses for his family, which had been enlarged by one with the birth of John on July 5, 1901 in Turkey. The autocratic Sultan really didn't wish to lose his advisor, but the Spurs quietly slipped away. Over the next few years, Spurr completed geologic studies in Nevada, Washington, and Colorado, all published by the USGS, and a constant stream of scientific papers published in various science journals. He eventually left the USGS in August of 1905. He was immediately hired by Guggenheim-dominated American Smelting and Refining, Orasco. They sent him to solve problems at their Esperanza silver mine in Mexico. From 1908 to 1912, Spur and Roland Cox operated a highly successful mining consulting business. During those years, Spur was recognized as one of the highest paid mining consultants in the world. Cox and Spur split, and during World War I, Spur first served on the War Minerals Investigations Committee, then to solve the post-World War II mineral glut, partly caused by the success of the Investigations Committee itself, which had brought so many minerals on. We talked about this a little on a previous episode, that after the First World War, the mines at Kennecott were badly stung by the crash in silver prices. Well, in 1919 then, Spur was asked to edit the Engineering and Mining Journal, a position that he held till 1927. During that tenure, Spur greatly improved the stature of the journal. In 1920, Spur suggested that a society was needed to scientifically document the origin and controls of mineral deposits. Spur's suggestion was immediately acted on as the Society of Economic Geologists was formed that same year. Spur served as the president of the organization in 1923. 20 years earlier, Spur had suggested a scientific journal for the same purpose. The journal, called Economic Geology, came into being within a few months after Spur's suggestion. So not only for Alaska, but for the science of geology in general, Spur was very, very influential. Well, the 1920s then were marked by Spur's most intensive work on ore magmas. That was his true academic area and field. Spur believed that many metallic ore deposits were derived from what was known as a late-stage melt rather than aqueous solutions. This was important to people doing mining and exploration because it might explain more about the type of rock they would find the better ore deposits in. Spur believed that various gold or copper or silver belts owed their origin to ancient, deeply seated metallic regions. In Spurl's worldview of ore magmas, he proposed the Earth had three zones. First, a superficial zone or crust of consolidated rocks. Secondly, a deeper magma zone. And third, a still deeper zone, which is a storehouse of certain metals. He said, the lowest zone is a stable zone. The intermediate or magma zone is stable neither as to form nor as position. It is quite restless. This fluid layer in the sandwich is therefore the great stabilizer. It performs the observed physical and chemical adjustments. It is the agent which ultimately renews the continents and affects the mountains, supplies the igneous intrusions, and forms the ore deposits. Well, this has been overcome by more modern science and more modern ways of researching and discovering what's actually going on. But the idea that he realized there was at least a semi-liquid or plastic layer to the Earth was a proper discovery. He published 100 articles in the journals, books, and monographs, as well as poetry and books for general audience. He has named after him Mount Spur, a very active volcano near Anchorage, Spur Crater on the Moon, and a mineral, spurite. Many of his papers, correspondence and photographs are in the American Heritage Center of the University of Wisconsin, and from that organization, many of them are online. Others are preserved in the Anchorage office of the United States Geological Survey. His observational work on the Earth's moon was important. In his recognition, the naming of the volcano, Mount Spur, was certainly well-deserved. If you remember, his party were the first ones to go through the Mount Katmai and Valley of 10,000 Smokes and that volcanic area west of Anchorage. His faithful and sometimes outspoken wife deserves the last word. About a year after Spur's death and during an eruption of Mount Spur, a reporter asked Sophie if she thought that Josiah was attempting contact. Mrs. Spur replied, "Well, I knew that Edward had passed on to another world, but until today, I didn't know which one." This concludes, then, our look at Josiah Spur, a person who was very influential in the programs which came and mapped Alaska's resources. All of the names that you probably have heard, Prindle's, Brooks, and Murtry, the various people who worked the gold fields, all for the survey came on Spur's heels, if you will. I find it interesting that he, in fact, missed the strikes at Dawson by just a few days. Again, his mind and his ability to comprehend might have been very, very valuable to the early miners there. The areas that he did map, they mapped very quickly. His first trip was thought that it would take 2 years. He and his associates did an excellent job in 4 months. They were very efficient. They moved very quickly. And unlike some, admittedly, like some other expeditions, they had pretty good weather, so they weren't beat up too bad by what was going on around them. And still available is a book by Stephen J. Spur, In Search of the Kuskokwim, The Life and Times of J. Edwin Spur. That was published by the Epicenter Press in Kenwood, Washington. If happen to think you'd like to read up a little more, his adventures and travels are just about perfect for reading on a long winter evening. Well, that's a wrap pretty much for today. In the future, I hope to have some segments on such people as Jay Livengood when he first arrived in Alaska, mine near Eagle, and the man whom Livengood is named after. Also, I think we'll see some other individuals and miners. Most people are interested in the stories of who came before us and some of the hardships they went under. So we'll also do that, maybe look a little bit at some of the earliest history of the Tananaw Valley. I've been able to obtain some long out-of-print papers that were written, and I think we can do a pretty interesting segment on what happened in the Tananaw from 1898 to about 1920, what the overall situation in mining looked like. We can also, we'll certainly find other things to do, and if anybody has suggestions of subjects they'd like, I suppose you could email them here to the station, and they'll be passed along to me. So, we are now ready to sign off for the day. I'd like to thank everybody for being here, and see you next month.
Voice, your station. This is KFAR Radio, Fairbanks, the heartbeat of Alaska.